Hello, everyone. This is Graham with Graham Talks Pats. You're listening to WHUS Stores. Patriots, big time win over the Tennessee Titans to move to 5-2. Titans dropped to 1-6 on the year. Patriots, once again, just looked really, really solid throughout the game. 31-13 win, pitching a shutout in the fourth quarter. Admittedly, beginning of the game didn't look so great for New England. You're down 10-3 in the first quarter, and it's just one of those games where you're like, all right, like, Titans, they obviously fired Brian Callahan the week prior, the Monday after their loss against the Raiders. You have to be pretty happy with, you know, what we saw, as Patriots fans. The offense was humming once again. 28 points in the second and third quarters. Nothing in the fourth, but nothing for the Titans either in the fourth. At that point, it was kind of the game was over after the third quarter, 31-13 going into the fourth, and then it continued that way until the end of the fourth. As a whole, we'll take a look at the offense first. Drake May, once again, offense was humming. 21 of 23, 222 yards. Two touchdowns. May was phenomenal. Josh Dobbs, 1 of 1 for 12 yards in the one play he came in for, or the couple plays he came in for, and the one ball he threw completed to, if I remember correctly, was Pop Douglas. Just a good performance from Dobbs, I guess, in the very minimal snaps he got. And Drake May was incredible. Once again, he's the first Patriot to ever record a 90-plus completion percentage while throwing for 20-plus passes in a game. Tom Brady's best ever was 88.5. Mays was well into the 90s. So obviously great to see that from a guy who's just been a budding young star. He elevated himself to, I think, third now in MVP odds. So phenomenal to see. As a Patriots fan and as an NFL fan, just to see the young players, you know, see how Jaden Daniels last year be so good. And this year, Drake May taking a step to just new heights. He's been incredible through the first 7 weeks here. So great to see as a Patriots fan. If you had told me after the Raiders game this is what it would look like, I would have told you, hey, you know, there's not a – I can't be mad at that at all. He's playing an MVP level. He's turned it around from last year where, as good as he was, I think there were plenty of opportunities where and plenty of situations where I think he might have liked to have had them back. He last time they played the Titans, he made a phenomenal last-second effort to throw a touchdown to Ramondre Stevenson to force the game into OT. But what a lot of people don't remember about that game is the fact he throws in a double coverage that leads to an interception that ends that game. So he still last year, for as many flashes as he had, there were plenty of moments where you look at it and you say, hey, you know, you would have liked to have those opportunities back. And this year, I mean, he has 3 turnovers on the year. One of them was a fumble against the Steelers. The other 2 interceptions. Two of those total turnovers were against the Steelers. Another interception that was not a great one. That was a couple weeks ago, thankfully. So we're past that now. But before that, if you take away those two, his only other turnover was in week 1 against the Raiders. So you have to feel really, really good about what Drake May's put on display in this game and throughout the entire year. It's been great to see. Running the ball. The Patriots have been bad running the ball throughout this year. Ramondre Stevenson found a new gear. He was excellent on that first drive, and I think he totaled 42 rushing yards on that first drive alone. Finished the game 18 carries, 88 yards, and a TD. I thought for a second he might fumble on the goal line again there. It looked like when he was celebrating, he got a little excited. It looked like he almost flipped the ball in celebration before crossing the goal line. But obviously really, really good to see from Ramondre. And it's great for his confidence, too. He's gone a couple games now without fumbling. He hasn't fumbled since the Bills game, which is obviously a good sign for him. And if the Patriots can get a rushing offense together that, you know, resembles something that's at least middle of the pack, like, this is a team that can make a deep run into the playoffs and finish this year with a really, really good record. It's probably a little bit early to pencil them into the playoffs now, but even so, given their schedule, given their 5-2 record, given the fact that they're currently the number 2 seed, I know they haven't played some of the best teams in football, but their record doesn't the record is good. And for the rest of the year, they won't be playing a lot of great teams. You got the Jets twice. You got Miami again. You have the Joe Flacco led Bengals. You've got the Browns this upcoming week, which we'll get into in a little bit. You got the Giants. We'll have to see what the Lamar injury situation is by the time they play the Ravens. So I'd expect him to be fine with his current injury then. But if he were to get re-injured, which isn't outlandish to say, you could have another easy game on the schedule. You already beat the Bills. You have to play them again. So, and that'll be in Foxborough. So you've got an opportunity to win a lot of games this year. And they have so far. You win 5 out of 7. That's excellent. So, yeah, I think the thing that's going to be key come playoff time when it gets colder and also just in general when you have a functioning offense is a run game, which they haven't had over the past couple weeks. And this time, Ramondre, 18 for 88. It's a season high in rushing yards for the year, obviously adding another touchdown to that total, which is nice to see. Drake May also in the scramble game. He looked a lot more like last year Drake May. 8 carries, 62 yards, obviously most of that coming off of scramble yards. They don't really run design plays for Drake May as much as I kind of would like to see that in the low red zone. One thing that I think was probably surprising for a lot of fans, even more broadly for the NFL, for Trevion Henderson and fantasy owners, is Terrell Jennings' involvement. 5 for 18 yards, 5 carries for 18 yards, 3.6 a carry isn't phenomenal, but Mike Vrabel, I don't know if you guys saw the video on Twitter, but he was very, very excited about Jennings. Yelled that they found their 5-minute back. Currently, the Patriots only have 2 guys on the active roster. It's Stevenson and Trevion Henderson. So finding that third guy is going to be something that's key. Jennings only has 1 more elevation left. He was elevated against the Saints. Didn't see any offensive action there. But against the Titans, saw, 5 carries is a decent amount. So he definitely got involved this game against the Titans. But him out carrying Henderson is interesting. I suppose you don't want Henderson to get hurt, but I'd argue that Henderson hasn't done anything anyway, and I think it's more valuable to get him out there and get him some snaps. Probably not as powerful as Jennings. Jennings is a bigger guy, but Henderson is definitely a guy that you want to see get some more snaps. I think it'll be interesting to see exactly what that looks like going into the next couple of weeks. Jennings, I'm sure, will be elevated again next week, as they're going to need that RB3 yet again. But let's take a little bit of a deeper dive on Jennings, because I know people aren't as familiar with him. Went to Florida A&M, the Rattlers. Looking at just his performance, played 38 snaps last year, primarily just in kind of garbage time games, which, as fans know, we saw a lot of last year. We had plenty of garbage time games. And if you look at even this week, he played 8 snaps only, but he had 5 carries. So definitely pretty extensive. When he was out there, it was a run. They definitely gave him the opportunities. Last year, he played 38 total snaps, as I said. Didn't have a ton of involvement. His yards per carry wasn't great. Preseason of last year, I remember him playing fairly well. And let me pull that up. I want to see what his preseason stats were exactly. He's an encouraging player. I think, you might have something with him. So he had 5 for 18 this week, like I said. Last year, 13 for 33, 2.5 a carry is far from great. But then last year in preseason, like I said, I remember him doing pretty well, and he did. 6.2 a carry, 12 carries for 74 yards. So you definitely might have something there. He's 6'1", 225, so he's a bigger guy. If you're looking for that power back and you think you can find one in your own building in Jennings, I think that's super, super encouraging. We talked a little bit, just as a fan base, about the need for an extra running back with Antonio Gibson going down for the year, but I think you might have something with Jennings potentially, and it seems like Vrabel thinks so too. Obviously, want to see Henderson get more involved. Only 2 carries for 5 yards, no catches, so a little bit disappointing, I'm sure, for fantasy owners. I think at this point he's probably on your bench, but I think it's definitely something to look out for. Is what exactly does that RB3 position look like? Especially given that the Patriots filled their final roster spot, which we'll get into a little bit later when we get into more of a news sort of segment of the show. Receiving, Stephon Diggs continues to just be the high volume guy. Seven catches, 69 yards. Kayshon Booty, deep touchdown, 2 for 55 and a touchdown on the day. Matt Collins, 2 for 49. Hunter Henry, 4 catches for 33. Pop Douglas with a phenomenal one-handed grab on a 4th and 1 when Drake May came back in after being in concussion protocol. 3 for 17 on the day for him. Austin Hooper, 2 for 11 only. Great, phenomenal touchdown catch. Excellent play against his former team. Made NFL Red Zone's top 5 plays of the day. Kyle Williams, the rookie out of Washington State, he was one of my favorite players at the position at receiver coming out of the draft. He just hasn't found a way to really get involved, unfortunately. And it's unfortunate because I really did think that he had an opportunity to perform this year. He only has 2 catches for 20 yards so far throughout each game, and I mean he's played all 7, so that's a little bit disappointing. It definitely looks a little bit disjointed when he's out there, I think the hope for him is just saying, hey, you know, get him involved while you can. Other than that though, let's kind of move on and you know, I think either way he's the receiver 5 right now. So I think having a young receiver 5 who was a third round pick is encouraging. Obviously it shows that the 1, 2, 3, and 4 in Diggs, Booty, Hollins, and Pop Douglas have played well. But I think if you're Kyle Williams, you have to look at it and say, hey, you know, I wish I could get a little bit more involved here. And they've given him the opportunities. He just, you know, we haven't seen a lot out of him. Did draw a deep PI in the Saints game, so that was encouraging to see, if nothing else. Fellow rookie Quincy Riley was defending him on that play. I think overall, the Titans' defense is not very good. It's not something to really jump for joy about that you put 31 on them, 24 offensively. But definitely shows that you've got, you know, an offense that is consistent and continues to hum. Like, you've got a phenomenal passing offense, and if we can keep this rushing offense up with Ramondre Stevenson, I think you feel really, really good about it. Andy Borgala is making his kicks again. Only one to make as far as the field goal goes, but going 4 for 4 on extra points, which couldn't be said at the beginning of the year. So that's obviously good to see. Defensively, Marty Mapu led the team in tackles, somewhat surprisingly. Milton Williams had a nice sack. 2 more for Kalevon Chaisson, who won AFC Defensive Player of the Week. Phenomenal week for him. He also had the fumble recovery and walked into the end zone for a 4-yard touchdown. Harold Landry getting a sack against his former team. One guy that I'm not a huge fan of that continuously comes up is Carlton Davis. I'd like to kind of highlight that a little bit. They paid him $20 million a year to be the corner 2 alongside Christian Gonzalez. And Gonzalez has been very good. And I think you could argue that you have someone in Marcus Jones in the slot who's also better. Right now, I just think you're in a tough spot. I recently wrote an article talking about how they should regret, or they're probably regretting signing Carlton Davis. I know the ties between him and Terrell Williams, the defensive coordinator, are there. Obviously, they spent a year together in Detroit. They only spent 1 year together, as both of them were only in Detroit for 1 year. But it's got to be frustrating when you look at the other options that were available. Tre'Varius Ward is PFF's number 3 rated corner. DJ Reed's playing well with the Lions. Reed was actually signed to less money per year than Davis. Ward and Davis got the same contract in terms of total value. Ward did get a little bit more guaranteed money, which might have played a role. And they're not signing Ward. But, I think it's a little bit disappointing that Davis was the best player they could get. I think he continuously, you know, has struggled. Even if his numbers in terms of allowing catches haven't looked that bad, where it's, hey, you're not allowing a ton of yardage, it's because he's grabbing. He's getting called for PIs, he's getting called for holdings, and he's allowing the short balls on 3rd and 6, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 4 that, you know, are the real killers. So I think you're definitely disappointed with what you've seen out of Carlton Davis thus far. And I think that, you know, we'll see as the season goes on. Maybe he gets a little bit more comfortable when Terrell Williams comes back and is more involved with the team than he's been over the past couple of weeks as he's dealing with illness. Yeah, I think that just as a whole, you obviously want to see a little bit more from him. But plenty of Patriots getting their revenge over the Titans. Obviously, we talked about Vrabel already, getting his revenge over his former team, Harold Landry, as we talked about as well. But Jack Gibbons, Titan last year. You've got Robert Spillane, who spent his first year with Vrabel and the Titans. That's how he got his start. So even though there's less of an association with those guys, it's got to feel good to get back a little bit. Josh Dobbs, also another guy who spent some time with the Titans. Matt Collins feels like one of those guys that could have spent time with the Titans, but he did not. We'll go just to look at defensively, looking at the receiving stats for the Titans. Their rushing attack did next to nothing. They totaled 39 yards, 22 from Tajay Spears, 18 from Tony Pollard, and negative one from Chimere Dike. Chimere Dike, though, receiving 4 for 70 and a touchdown. That was that deep bomb at the beginning from Cam Ward, who was excellent in the first quarter and then progressively got worse. Tony Pollard, 6 grabs for 43 yards. Van Jefferson, 4 for 41. Gunnar Helm, 4 for 36. Elie Giamonor, 2 for 29. 3 for 18 for Tajay Spears. 2 for 18 from Tyler Lockett. Chigakonkwo held without a catch. So, I think just as a whole, you don't have a ton of options there if you're the Tennessee Titans, especially with Calvin Ridley out. Obviously, I don't think the receiving core is a hallmark of this team as they're 1-6 now. But, Chimere Dike, I think you like what you have with him if you're the Titans. And I think you maybe like what you have with Gunnar Helm, Elie Giamonor. Tyler Lockett recently released. We're going to actually talk about him in a little bit as well. Because now he's available. So he could be a guy that the Patriots potentially look to bring in. Defensively, the only guy that really stuck out to me, I thought Tavondre Sweat had a decent day. He also had a sack. Jihad Ward, another sack getter for them. He looked all right. But not a ton to speak on defensively for the Titans. Cedric Gray, linebacker to Maryland. He's a tackling machine. He has been all year. He continues that trend. But as a whole, I think you have to feel pretty solid about where the Titans are right now, or where the Patriots are right now. I think they had another good performance. They're 5-2 now. It's hard to feel too bad about that. We're gonna move on now to looking ahead to this upcoming week. Now it'll be very interesting. The Patriots play the Browns, and the Browns are, this will be an interesting game. I kind of thought that Carolina earlier this year could have been a trap game, right? Where they were coming off a 30-0 win over Atlanta, who Atlanta's shown over the past couple of weeks that they're a good team, or at least a solid team, a playoff contender. And Cleveland did not beat an Atlanta-level team. They beat Miami last week, but it was a dominant win against the Dolphins. We're going to pull this up right here. We're going to pull up Cleveland versus Miami Dolphins. And take a look at some of the stats. Defensively, they're phenomenal. They won 31-6. If you remember, the Patriots had 27 put up on them by Miami. Miami also, obviously, a divisional opponent. They had Tyreek Hill then. Obviously, still playing for something in week two. I think at this point, a lot of their players are pretty checked out. Tua was really bad. 12 for 23, 100 yards and 3 picks. Really poor from him. Quinn Ewers came in towards the end. 5 for 8 for 53 for Quinn Ewers. The Miami offense is interesting. Obviously, Devon Achane, Ali Gordon are their primary backs. Dwayne Eskridge led the team in receivings. So that's pretty poor. But focusing on the Browns, which is obviously, as I mentioned, the Patriots' opponent this upcoming weekend, Dylan Gabriel, 13 for 18 for 116 yards. It was a heavy rushing day for Quinshon Judkins. Only 3.4 a carry, but 3 touchdowns off his 25 carries for 84 yards. Dylan Sampson and Jerome Ford combined for 4 carries for 8 yards, so it's definitely Judkins' backfield now that he's kind of settled in. Harold Fannin continues to be one of the steals of this draft. 4 for 36. He's, as far as I know, is still leading the Browns in receiving. He's largely overtaken David Njoku for his role as the tight end 1. I'm curious right now what the snap split looked like between them. I'm going to look this up now. Harold Fannin, a rookie out of Bowling Green, has looked really, really good this year. He's 82% of the snaps against Miami, 80% against Pittsburgh, 79% against Minnesota, 85% against Detroit. He hasn't played any less than 63% of the snaps this year. So he's looked really, really good. David Njoku, on the other hand, he's yet another guy we're going to talk about in sort of a little trade segment that we're going to have on going on later. He did not play against against Miami. But, yeah, I think just as a whole, you look at, you know, what he's been able to bring to the table over the past couple of years, and you look and you say, hey, like, this guy's a very talented player. Had six catches for 67 yards and a touchdown against Minnesota a couple of weeks ago. That was in Dylan Gabriel's first start. So he's likely to come back for that game against New England. But the receiving corps for the Browns, it leaves a lot to be desired, to say the least. Jamari Thrash, out of second-year player out of Louisville. Malachi Corley, who was obviously a Jets draft pick last year, third rounder, did not work out in, I can't emphasize how much he didn't work out for the Jets. It's very rare you see a third round pick cut that quickly. Ironically, the Patriots had a second round pick that was all but cut, sent to the Saints after being placed on season ending IR. That is Jalen Polk, that I'm talking about. Jerry Jeudy, only 2 for 17 on the day. It's really impressive that the Browns put up as many points as they did. Tyson Campbell, the newly acquired cornerback who they traded Greg Newsome for, also put a touchdown on the board through a pick six. But, I mean, it's very impressive that given their individual stats, right, none of these really wow anyone. 116 yards for their quarterback, 36 yards was the leading receiver, and then 3.4 yards a carry for their running back. You have to say overall, like, it's a pretty lackluster box score stats for the Browns. But it shows how good their defense is. And their defense is really, really good. I mean, just as a whole, it's an excellent unit. You've got Myles Garrett, obviously, is one of the best edge rushers in football, to say the least. I mean, he's been incredible ever since entering the league. They've got Mason Graham, who's the number 5 pick. You've got Malik Collins, who's a really, really savvy veteran, good pass rusher. I'm going to look at the exact stats right now. Let's take a look here. The Browns are currently, so the Browns defense is, yeah, this is ridiculous. I didn't even mention Carson Tressinger, as the linebacker, their main linebacker. He's been incredible. He's one of the top candidates for defensive rookie of the year right now. As far as like defensive rankings go, 3rd in pass defense, 4th in run defense, 12th in points per game. For a team that's 2-5 and looked like before last game had a chance to go 1-6, those aren't numbers you expect. That shows how organized and good this defense is. It's a really, really good unit. And it's something the Patriots are going to have to look out for, because admittedly their offense is really, really bad. They're 30th in the league, and they were largely carried by their defense even on Sunday, despite a pretty bad opponent in Miami. But you've got an opportunity now to move to 6-2, and it's going to be interesting to see how they approach this game. Now, I'd expect the approach is just going to be, let's put the hurt on the Browns, right? And I have no doubt they can do that defensively by stifling Dylan Gabriel, but I think this might be less of an offensive explosion than we think. You know, obviously you think Cleveland Browns, and not a great team, especially with Dylan Gabriel at the helm. It should be a team to handle. And I agree fully. I think they'll win by multiple scores. But I don't think it'll be one of those where it's against the Panthers, like 42-13, I think the score was, against them. I don't think it's going to be anything like that. I think this is more like a 27-6, 24-7 sort of game, just given how good their defense is. Yeah, I think my prediction in my recent article is 24-6 for the final score. I'd expect it's going to hover right around that range. I think the only way the Browns can move the ball excessively would be if they can't bottle up Quinshon Judkins, which I don't really expect them to have much trouble doing given what their success has looked like over the past, over the past seven games, where they've been holding running backs consistently at under 50 yards. I think this is actually the sort of game where you could see the running back finally break that streak in Judkins, just because he's given such a huge share of the carries, and the quarterback situation doesn't really let them throw the ball however many times they want a game. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. This is a game where you could definitely this is a, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that you could see Shadur playing this game at all a little bit. Dylan Grabey, obviously a rookie QB. Cam Ward looked pretty good last week as a rookie QB, despite, you know, a couple crucial mistakes in there. But if you look at what Dylan Gabriel brings to the table, it's a lot of short throws, and his receiving core isn't very talented. So I think there's an opportunity where if the Patriots can find a way to turn the ball over a couple times, even though Dylan Gabriel hasn't yet thrown an interception because they've been so conservative with him, there's an opportunity where for Shadur to play a little bit if that were to happen. Now, to me, I think they're probably just going to play very, very conservative, let Quinshon Judkins, Harold Fan, and David Njoku be the main targets and say, hey, we're going to throw it to our tight ends. We're going to throw it short. We're going to run the ball. We're not going to let our rookie QB lose confidence or turn the ball over. That's not how we play. So I do expect kind of an uninspiring performance from the Browns offensively. But if the Patriots camp out the run game, which they haven't had any issue with this year, so I'm not worried about that, then they could end up with some issues. So that would be my one reservation with playing the Browns. As a whole, I don't think there's a ton to talk about with the Browns currently, just because they haven't been very good. We'll kind of move on now to more general news for the Patriots. So the Patriots made a waiver claim on yesterday, so Tuesday, that I found to be a really interesting one. We'll take a little bit of a deeper look at him. His name is Caleb Murphy. I apologize. He came out, I think he was claimed on Monday, actually. Yeah, Monday. They claimed him off waivers from the Chargers. So I don't think we need to get anything twisted here. He was released by the Chargers and signed for a reason, right? There is potential in Caleb Murphy, but I think at the same time, you look at it and you say you were released midseason for a reason. You're probably not a star. And currently that is true. He's not a stud. Here's the deal, though. He has the opportunity to become one if he can continue to develop. This guy played D2 football at Ferris State. His stats are not only record-breaking, but just honestly ridiculous, right? So he was a two-time champion. He was a two-time D2 champion. He started at Grand Valley State, which is Matt Judon's alma mater. Eventually, in 2021, during his first season at Ferris State, notched 14.5 sacks. And then in 2022, the next year, 25.5 sacks, broke the NCAA record for any level, right? Then tied the record for most tackles for loss in a season at 39, right? So that's ridiculous numbers, to say the least. So he also won the Ted Hendricks Award. That's for the best defensive end, no matter what level you're playing at, right? So he won this award in 2022. To give you an idea for who normally wins this award, Aiden Hutchinson, Chase Young, Bradley Chubb, Jadeveon Clowney, all top five picks have been awarded the award since 2012. Three other first-round picks have won it in that time frame. And then this past year, Donovan Ezeraku, second-round pick, won it. So Murphy is the first and so far the only non-FBS player to ever win the award. I would expect that to continue for the foreseeable future. This guy had an absurd college career. So I think when you look at a potential role for Murphy, I think he's probably had a better season than every edge rusher on the team, with the exception of Kalavon Chaisson and Harold Landry, who are your starters, obviously. Keon White has been just a non-factor all year, right? And Anfernee Jennings is become a healthy scratch. He was at the beginning of the season too. He clearly does not fit what Mike Vrabel wants to do. So Murphy, I think, has an opportunity to produce. You look at him and you say, you know, he had a sack against the Giants earlier this year for his first NFL sack. Strong preseason too against the Saints, who obviously the Patriots just played. He had a 90.4 PFF pass rush grade through his four preseason games, because they had the Hall of Fame game. 78 pass rush grade. So just really, really impressive from him. Obviously, exactly what you want to see. He's still 25, so he's got some room to grow. You're looking at the just guys who have kind of developed a little bit later on. The Giants or the Lions have a guy right now, Alkadin Muhammad, I think his name is, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, Alkadin Muhammad. He has 5 sacks through 7 games. The Patriots, one of 5 teams along with the Lions, who have 2 players in the top 15 for sacks. Yeah, I mean, Alkadin Muhammad is 30 years old. He's having the best year of his career so far. So you have guys who come onto the scene very late on who are very productive. So I'm not saying Murphy's going to be anything like that, but you definitely, that's the hope for him, right? If he can become a consistent 5-sack, 6-sack, 7-sack guy, right? You got to feel really, really good about that. That's a phenomenal waiver wire pickup. So I think that's really good news for them. So yeah, it looks good. Now the Patriots also with that signing, they didn't have to release anyone, which is kind of nice. They've had an open roster spot for the last couple weeks and have consistently just filled it with practice squad elevations. We'll see what happens with Terrell Jennings now. My expectation before that sign, before Murphy was signed, is that Terrell Jennings would just be signed to the active roster at some point this week. But obviously they like Murphy. So if they do opt to sign Jennings at some point, they'll have to release someone. Maybe that's Murphy. Maybe it's someone else in the next couple weeks. So that'll be something to keep your eye out for. Other than that, I want to move on a little bit less so now to Patriots specific and more just trade candidates for the entire league, but obviously guys the Patriots could be interested in. So it was reported by Albert Breer earlier in the week that the Patriots have been making calls about receivers, have interest in receivers. Jordan Addison and Chris Olave were the names that we heard. Chris Olave, that makes an abundance of sense to me, right? I fully understand why Chris Olave could be on the move. Obviously, Kellen Moore has the Saints playing better football than I think their record shows. They took the Patriots a little bit further than I think people would have expected. And then also, you know, obviously taking the Bills, you know, making that a close game before the Patriots. We'll see if the Bills are the real deal. You know, their wins aren't all that impressive now, especially with the Ravens bottoming out and not playing so well this year. But Chris Olave, you could definitely could be on the move. You look at it, you say, hey, you know, this guy's a good player, former top 10 pick. I think he was the 11th pick, actually, or 12th pick, maybe. Former very high first-round pick. And you look at him and you say, hey, you know, we're not going to compete this year. He's on a little bit of an expensive deal. We're going to have to pay him soon anyway. What can we get for him in a move? So that's a guy I could definitely see trading. I don't see why Minnesota would want to trade Jordan Addison. I know they lost this weekend to the Eagles, but I just, even with J.J. McCarthy, I don't think you want a young quarterback having a shortage of weapons. And if Justin Jefferson were to go down and you traded Addison at that point, you're looking at Adam Thielen, Jalen Naylor, and Jordan Mason, and T.J. Hockenson as your options, which aren't bad options. But if you can have the option of having Addison in there with those guys, should a top candidate or should a top target like Justin Jefferson go down, I think you feel a lot better. So I wouldn't expect Jordan Addison to be on the move anytime soon unless Minnesota just is totally sick of his. You know, maybe he's not a great guy in the locker room. Obviously had the suspension earlier this year. So, yeah, that might be something to look out for, but I wouldn't expect that. Olave makes a lot more sense to me. The name that I've seen tossed around, I've seen two names at receiver tossed around. One would be a lot easier than the other. One would be Jalen Waddle. That would be the guy who's a little bit harder to acquire. And if you're Miami, I'd have to imagine that even though they should be sellers at the deadline, they won't be. And the reason I say that is because the GM, Chris Greer, and the head coach, Mike McDaniel, are GMing and coaching for their jobs, right? Especially with Tyreek Hill out, I don't think you want to get rid of another receiver. Otherwise, you're rocking with Malik Washington and Dwayne Eskridge as your top two guys on the outside, which I don't think you probably are super excited about if you're Mike McDaniel. So, especially as a coach trying to save his job, I don't think it makes any sense to try to move one of your top players for a pick that you're never going to get to use. Now, as an organization, if you said, hey, there's no, if Mike McDaniel was assured, hey, there's no way you're getting fired, maybe, and for the foreseeable future, you're not going to get fired, which is not an assurance that Stephen Ross is going to make him. I think that, you know, maybe things do change a little bit and you say, hey, as good as Jalen Waddle is, he's on an expensive deal. I think they signed him to $3.85. He's on an expensive deal. We should move this guy while we have the opportunity to get some draft picks back for him, especially given that we're paying Tua as much money as we are. So, and even if that was the case, even if Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer were here to stay, I'm not sure that they would want to trade one of the better young pass catchers in the league. Obviously, last year, a little bit of a down year for Waddle. That was the first time in his, to that point, four-year career that he had ever dropped under 1,000 yards, had 700-something. I don't remember off the top of my head right now. This year, last past game, he had one catch, right? So maybe he's unhappy with his involvement in the offense. I think it's really unlikely that Miami, if they were to make a trade, make that in division. That seems just really irresponsible on their part and really unlikely, especially given Waddle's age. You're going to have to deal with him for the next 5 to 10 years. And it was also suggested by Pro Football Network that the Patriots only have to give up a third or fourth round pick. If that's really the case, yes. I think it should go without saying that you try to make a move for Jalen Waddle for a third or fourth round pick. Yes, obviously. I find it hard to believe he'd actually be available for a fourth round pick. If you gave him a third and a promising young player like a Keon White sort of guy, maybe you could sell me on that. If you're Miami, maybe you could sell me on that. I do not need to be sold at all as a Patriots fan. If you told me you can send Keon White and a third round pick to Miami for Jalen Waddle, I would drive Keon to the airport myself. I just don't think that's a possibility. As far as the secondary option, which seems a lot more likely to me, it's a guy the Patriots just played in Tyler Lockett. To me, right now, looking at the Patriots wide receivers, you've got Stephon Diggs, who's your high volume guy, who's looked really, really good. You pay him a lot. You pay him well for a reason, right? Your second option is Kayshon Boutte, who's your deep threat. You got to feel good about him. Then your 3 and 4 are Mac Collins and Pop Douglas. They've both had their own sort of niches in the game. Pop Douglas hasn't had the season that I think a lot of people would have hoped, but he's definitely been more involved over the past couple weeks than he was at the beginning of the season. Mac Collins, a phenomenal blocker. They almost use him as a tight end 3 sometimes, too, when Jack Westover's lined up in the backfield as a fullback. So I think he's got a lot of utility. Obviously, a good special teamer. Has experience with Josh McDaniels during their time in Vegas. He's been around the block. He's been on plenty of teams. And for a guy who doesn't catch a ton of balls, he consistently finds a way to remain a top 4 to 5 receiver. So he's a guy that I and I think a lot of other Patriots fans like. Then after that, you've got a pair of rookies in Kyle Williams and Efton Chisholm. We briefly touched on Kyle Williams earlier. I just think it looks a little bit disjointed when he's out there. It seems like every time he's out there, the defense knows, hey, they're running a play to Kyle Williams because he's never a part of the normal offense. So this might be a little bit of a redshirt year for him. Efton Chisholm, it's definitely a redshirt year for. He's gotten a little bit more involved now with the kick return game, with Antonio Gibson being out. And he's done a solid job. Adam did a solid job last week, did a decent job against the Saints too. So I think there's definitely something to work with there. I definitely wouldn't let either of those guys, though, stop you from signing Lockett, but I might let them stop me from signing him to the active roster. What I mean by that is you currently have 2 running backs on your roster. You're probably going to want to sign Terrell Jennings, or you're going to want to add a running back via trade. And unless it's a 1-for-1 player swap, which isn't out of the realm of possibility, you're going to have to create a roster spot for Jennings or another running back, which is already one roster spot you need to make. And you would need to create another one for Tyler Lockett. And I think that if you have 2 running backs and you add a third, so you're already up one, you're already 1 over the roster limit, and you add another receiver, you can't justify having 7 receivers on that roster. And I don't think there's any guy that you can cut right now. I don't think you're going to cut Efton Chisholm because he's your punt returner, he's your kick returner, and he had such a good preseason. I think he'd get picked up by someone else. I think Kyle Williams, you definitely can't cut. You're not going to cut a third-round pick, regardless of how, you know, meh his production has been through 7 games. And then as far as the top 4 guys go, obviously you're not going to cut one of your top 4 guys when your offense has been humming like it has been over the past 7 weeks. So particularly over the last couple of weeks when Drake May just hasn't thrown interceptions. So I don't really see a role for Lockett on the active roster now. What I could see them doing, if he doesn't return to Seattle or something like along those lines, I could definitely see a world where he signs with the practice squad and is elevated. And you just say, hey, we're going to sign you. We're going to promise you 3 elevations for sure. And then we're going to, you know, reestablish things after that. And if you're terrible through those couple games, then we say, hey, you know, go sign somewhere else, or You know, obviously, if he's not playing well in practice, then you make different decisions based off that. But I think as a whole, it doesn't take a whole lot to sign. It definitely doesn't take a whole lot to sign Tyler Lockett. But I think there's merit to signing him, but I don't think there's necessarily a defined role for him right away. I think there's always a role for a veteran slot option. I just think you kind of already have that with Diggs. You kind of have veterans, and you kind of have an offense that's already established themselves as one of the better ones in the league. So I think Lockett being signed to the practice squad and then elevated is a phenomenal idea. But I don't know if it makes a ton of sense for the time being to add a guy like Lockett to the active roster and release an Efton Chisholm, for example. I don't think that makes a ton of sense. Now, I think as far as other options go, there's not any other receivers that really stand out to me as guys who, A, I think could get moved, and B, guys the Patriots could have interest in. Right, we've seen the A.J. Brown stuff. The A.J. Brown stuff happens every single year. Every single year, everyone says, A.J. Brown's in the move. Him and Jalen Hurts are having a falling out, whatever. And then they have a game like they did the other night, or the other day on Sunday, where A.J. Brown is 120-some yards, gets in the end zone a couple of times, and, you know, all is well. So, yeah, I have no doubt that A.J. Brown, if he is going to get moved, which seems really unlikely to me, that will probably be an offseason thing. I think we talked about him briefly earlier. I think David Njoku could be a guy that you could look out for in the trade market. I mentioned moving an Austin Hooper and a pick, potentially, late-round pick for him, if that's something the Browns would be interested in. Just for the swap of tight ends, you can try to move Caden Wallace potentially, their 2024 third round pick, 68th overall, who they drafted to be a tackle, and then tried to move in a guard so far unsuccessfully, as he's been a healthy scratch every week. But you know, maybe he still has some trade value to a team. If the Browns are just feel like Fannin is far and away the better option at tight end, and they say, hey, we're not going to run enough two tight end sets to justify having a more expensive player in David Njoku on the squad, let's move him for draft capital while we still can. I mean, looking at the Browns, this is far from a Browns podcast, but given the Patriots are playing next week, I feel like it's relevant that they have young players and they have an opportunity to be a lot better. You have Dylan Sampson and Quinshon Judkins in the backfield, and you've got a pair of quarterbacks in Shadur and Dylan Gabriel, and both of them might be terrible. You know, you never know, but you've at least got rookies. Obviously, Fannin, the most notable guy in that group, aside from maybe Judkins, as players who, you know, have produced. Malachi Corley, as bad as he was with the Jets, he was a third-round pick a year ago. So you've got an opportunity to use a lot of these guys who've been either disappointing in other places in Corley's case, or were reasonably high picks in guys like Fannin and Judkins. So, yeah, I think you've got opportunities if you're the Browns to move forward, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see that this Sunday, and I think after this Sunday, if it goes particularly poorly, and they lose their sixth game of the year to drop to 2-6, maybe you say if you're them, hey, we're going to move on from David Njoku, or we're going to move on from a Jerome Ford. You know, what could we give up, or what could we get back for one of those sort of veteran players? Jerome Ford would be another guy, to a lesser degree than Njoku, but he'd be another guy if you want to fill that running back spot, that third running back role, to have some insurance behind Ramondre Stevenson and Travion Henderson. He would be a guy that I think they could look into potentially. I don't think it would take much at all to get him, particularly if they continue this carry split where he's only getting three carries and Quinshon Judkins is getting the bulk of the work. So, yeah, I think there's plenty of decent trade options for New England. I think they've got, you know, primarily at receiver, I think that's the number one option. If Jalen Waddle or Chris Olave are truly available, I think you need to be on the phone right now, dialing, seeing what it would take to get him, what a contract would look like for him. I think Jalen Waddle would be incredible. I just really find it hard to believe that he'd be on the move really anywhere right now, but particularly to New England. I think that seems super, super unlikely. Njoku would be interesting. I'm a huge Tyler Algier guy. I just think at this point with Atlanta, I don't think they're going to move sort of their co-RB1 almost with the way they use Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier. So I find it hard to believe he'll get moved, especially with how well Atlanta's playing over the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, I think that there's a lot of interesting trade options. I think that the Patriots made an interesting move the other day by signing Caleb Murphy. He was so dominant in D2. See if you can squeeze something out of that, and you know, see if you can get a third pass rusher who's more effective than Keon White or Anthony Jennings. Obviously, like we talked about, big win on Sunday against the Titans. We talked a little bit less about the Browns specifically, just because I truly do think this is a game where I can't imagine the Browns winning. You know, I think that even though the Patriots struggled a little bit against the Saints, with the short passing of Spencer Rattler, it was Spencer Rattler is a much better player than Dylan Gabriel is. And also, I think that Saints have better options and are more multifaceted offensively, with Taysom Hill being an option on the goal line and as a runner and as a receiver, too. Is he really does it all. Juwan Johnson, I don't think, is too far removed from a lot of the Browns' options that they have as far as receiving threats. Chris Olave is far better than anything the Browns have to offer a wide receiver. So I think that, you know, Rashid Shaheed's a phenomenal deep threat too. Brandon Cooks, can't forget about him, former Patriot, as a veteran presence. So I think there's a lot of guys on the Saints that are just better than what the Browns have. And the Patriots still didn't have a whole lot of trouble defensively with the Saints. They moved the ball between the 20s, but they didn't score. A lot of Blake Groupie field goals. So, yeah, I think as a whole, you have to feel pretty good about what this game's going to offer. And it might be one of those that's a little bit frustrating because you're expecting to go in there and win 45-0. And, you know, the game's over at halftime. I do, like I mentioned, kind of find that hard to believe because the Browns defensively are so good, and their defensive front, in particular with Mason Graham, Malik Collins, Myles Garrett, obviously, off the edge, and Carson Schwessinger in behind. Like, I just think that's such a good group that I do kind of find it hard to believe that they're just going to go in there and walk all over them, but at least offensively. But defensively, this is one of those games where I don't know if it's going to be 0-3, 6-7. I don't know what the exact final score for the Browns is going to be, but I'd expect it to be single digits. Yeah. So keys to the game, like I mentioned, bottle up Quinshon Judkins. It's really the main thing. Then other than that, just play your game. I think even young guys like Harold Fannin, they're good players, but I don't think you need to focus on them to a point where, you know, you're losing sleep over a guy who's been an impressive rookie, but nothing too crazy. So, yeah, I think as a whole, it's a good week for the Patriots. They wrapped up a big win in Tennessee, and now you can go home, have Cleveland come to you, and hopefully dominate the Browns on Sunday. So, feels good. This has been a fun first episode for Graham Talks Pats. This has been WHUS. This has been Graham Talks Pats on WHUS Stores. Thank you so much for listening.